Hello, get more listeners. Today we are super happy to have with us. So I'm going to destroy the name, but Janine, that's okay, and Leonard. So I say it in German, but I'm not sure. So Janine, can you
Fantastic.
confirm?
That's perfect.
Okay,
Thomas,
excellent.
it's a pleasure to be here with you. I'm so excited.
Great. So Janine, tell us, who are you?
Okay. To start with, I'm an architect. I have a little kid, so I'm a multitasker inevitably. And
How old is that kid? Oh, those kids? I don't know. Many, one more?
no. He's only one, he's five, but I had him being already very grown up. So it gets me in another part of the evolution of my brain. So I have to train also new skills, being already over 40, but that is a fantastic experience. So yes, those are my main definitions. However, even though I started as an architect, that delved me into the world of consumption. I've always designed stores and
Okay.
I started finding very curious things about redesigning stores. And that was that when a store was redesigned, the sales went up over 70%, but the
Really?
store sold the same product,
What were
the
they
same
selling?
t-shirt. No, I was
Clothing.
working for a shopping
No,
mall.
what was the shop selling? Clothing?
Yes, it wasn't a shopping mall. I was the architect of the
Okay.
shopping mall. So every brand that renewed and had like a face wash of their aesthetics, they increased tremendously their sales.
Crazy.
And that is when I started trying to understand what is happening with the brain and with the mind of people that when they go into a space that is designed differently, they change their behavior and
Okay.
they change their purchase intention. So that is when I got to neuromarketing, behavioral design, and all this fantastic world.
Okay. So, and what are you doing nowadays?
Now my main focus is customer experience. I design experience either in the physical or in the virtual world, leveraged by neuromarketing, behavioral design, and applied neuroscience. So I call myself a behavioral architect to fuse my past
Nice.
with my new definition.
That's nice. Well
Yeah.
done. So because I mean your marketing and all that things is a very large area. So what are you mostly focusing on? What gets you excited?
My magnetic passion is now behavior, understanding behaviors and designing behaviors. You want to design an outcome from an experience.
Okay.
And I work with labs, for example, designing or trying to build habits around a device. For example, for diabetic people, that they have like a patch. And there is all of a behavior around it because that connects them, a physical device connects them with their reality of having to be more aware, for example, of what they
Right.
eat or doing more exercise or trying to control glucose. So it's like a double-sided challenge because you have to build a habit around something that connects them to something they are not very attracted to at some point. I also work, for example, with an agricultural company, a very large agricultural company, that they sell grains. And that is a commodity. So it's very hard. It's not a end consumer. You have to
Correct, yeah.
design behavior from businesses to businesses.
Okay.
And so the scope is really wide.
I mean, it's interesting when you say that you have it's behavior from business. So a business can't have behaviors. It's the human beings inside
Of
that business
course.
have who have behaviors. I think
That is
very
so
often
true.
people miss that point because, oh, I'm doing B2B. No, you're doing human to human.
I love that. And actually, there's a very known example that they say if you are in a queue, for example, from a pharmacy, you have to buy some, I don't know, alcohol or whatever. and you're waiting, you're not comparing that experience that keeps you anxious and you want to finish it soon and you want to get your next task done. You're not comparing it to the other pharmacy. You might be comparing it to Amazon or to how long does it take for you to
Right.
make a purchase somewhere else. So it's not because many times people benchmark experiences from the same industry or from the same kind
Yes.
of interactions. And the truth is, just as you said, that as we are humans, we are integrative and we are comparing an experience in the online world, maybe with something on the offline world,
Right.
or maybe an interaction, a commercial interaction with a personal interaction.
Yeah,
I think that.
it's a very good point, and it's very interesting that you say that, because it's also like, when business people, entrepreneurs, or business owners or marketing people say, yes, I have to understand my competition to drive more traffic or whatever. But their competition has nothing to do with the guy who does the same product. It has to do with Iran shooting missiles on Israel, the war in Ukraine, the future election in the USA, etc., etc. That's the competition. It's the ones who
Of
take away
course.
that less than a redfish attention
Exactly.
capability. And yeah.
Exactly. Actually, I think it was the CEO of HBO, and he said, my competition is not Netflix. My competition is people's sleep. So that is understanding your business, knowing exactly what is the alternative for your customer and what is the other battles that they are going through when your brand is in place. So yeah, you've really got that point.
So I think you touched the surface of it by why are you doing what you are doing? I mean, you can have done many things. You went through, because we met, as you reminded me right before the podcast, that we met when I was talking about neuromarketing in some program you were attending, but it's a long way. So why behavior? Why specifically behavior? I mean, you said that you were impressed by some things, but you could have done many other
Yes.
things. Specialize on colors, on movement, on what do I know?
Yes. Actually, I'm so curious about this that anything that is in the realm of behavior or in the realm of consumer neuroscience, I grab it and I read it and I consume it. But maybe my true purpose is making companies' value visible to the world. And that is
Okay.
a huge title. Because it may touch points like the brand, and you have to design the brand. And to design the brand, you have to understand what is the gut feeling from a person of that brand. Martin Neumeyer, he's a branding expert, and he says, a brand is not what you say it is, it's what they say it is. It is a gut feeling, what it is that you feel when you see a swoosh, the Nike swoosh, right? So maybe like a very large title, it is, okay, I want to bring your value visible to the world. So then how do I communicate that value? And that communication could be from your website. So many times I assess the online, the web, the design, the content. Bringing your value is also, how is your interaction in the physical world? If you go to a bank, what does that person experience when you go to the bank or with public policies? If you have to pay, imagine a police makes you a ticket from your car and then you have to go pay it. Do we want to design a good experience for that? What is the final outcome that we need? We need people not to have tickets anymore, to have
Right.
a good driving behavior. So maybe designing a very an experience that has a lot of friction may contribute to the user to say, I don't want to go through this anymore.
Right.
So then design is not always necessarily good. It has to be attuned to the outcome you need to get. And that is understanding what is the value that I want to bring to the world. And maybe in the driving scope or in a public policies or or trying to get the city in a more ordered manner. I need people to drive more carefully, more consciously. And then I need to add friction wherever I can for them to say, I don't want to deal with this anymore.
That's interesting. Right. It's funny that you said that design should have a function, you know, because at one stage in my career, I worked for an office furniture company, like the worldwide leader in office furniture. So of course we're working with designers, and we're working with engineers, of course. And one engineer said to me that, well, the design should support the function, something like that. But our designers, we're just creating things that intellectually provide them some masturbation, I don't know. And they came back with ideas that made absolutely no sense. So design was completely disconnected at some stage from reality. So it's very interesting that you say that it has to have a function, and going down the whole process, in fact. So I think it's very interesting, yeah.
I love your example. Inevitably, I bring authors, but I don't know if you know Don Norman. He has a book, he says, that's called The Design of Everyday Things. And he has this concept of the Norman doors, where people maybe, for example, design handles of the doors in a
Right.
vertical way or horizontal or in diagonal. And actually, he states that there is every object and every interaction and every space has what he calls affordabilities. That is something that that object enables you, offers you to do. And with doors, for example, because of our body, if the bar of the door is horizontal, we tend to push, we tend
Right.
to lean over the door. And if the bar is ver vertical,
We
we
pull.
tend to hang from it. So that is something that happens in an unconscious level that has to do with design. And whenever, and that happens also with physical objects, but also in virtual interactions, or with the tone of voice of people, or with the way somebody talks to us, or with, I don't know, how we go through hanging clothing in a store. The way that things are, the disposition of things enables us a certain behavior. So it's critical to understand that. And I think there's not so much written about it. There's a lot of investigation yet to do about what it is that makes us change a behavior given either the height, the texture, ambient cues that you have in a space, and that proposes a behavior as well.
I think casinos are way more advanced in that than any other area because they pay attention of the lights, the color, even the flow of oxygen in the rooms. So that you get more oxygen makes the alcohol that you drink, that's why they're serving alcohol all the time, remove some of your safety fuses and so on.
I
There are no
didn't know
windows.
that.
There are no windows because they don't want you to know what time it is so that you stay longer. Red color makes you more aggressive when you play, makes you spend more
Yeah.
money. No, they are good.
Yes, and actually, there is also a lot of social proof when you go into the casino, for example, you listen to all of the machines and the noise of coins, and there's not so many people winning, actually. But the sound of the noise makes the social proof and this feeling of I'm gonna miss out of the gain that everybody else is taking. So you are anxious to go in and play and try your luck. Casinos are great behavioral designers.
Oh yes, absolutely, absolutely. They are magnificent at that. So, and for our listeners who are business owners and entrepreneurs, how can they, what would be your advices to either, if they are new at that, create or improve a brand with everything around it that generates no friction? I mean, that's a very generic question, I know.
Yes, but you know what? For maybe it's like a not sexy answer, but the first thing is knowing how to read your customers and you yourself understand that you are possibly biased when you are checking on the experience that you are giving. So it is very important to bring somebody from outside your system, your company, your team. To have them look at your experience with fresh new eyes. Try not to judge anything that they say. And actually, and this is also very important, whatever they can bring, how is it based on facts? You have to, at some point you have to understand what are the facts that are supporting an argument. and actually know the dimension of your friction in your interactions. So related to customer experience, maybe I would say, bring somebody, run through your experience, build a journey. That is maybe the process that I usually do with companies. And the journey map, there's always an example that is, okay, if you're going to take a train from point A to B, where does your journey start? And people usually say, okay, when I go into the station and I hop on the train. And actually your journey started when you were considering buying a ticket, or even
right.
earlier, when you were considering traveling and you had the option of going up by bus, by train, or by plane. So that is the initial state of the journey that, even though it sounds obvious, many companies say, okay, my journey starts when somebody buys my product online, and then I have to deliver, or when somebody walks into my store. There are a lot of drivers before that that many times are overseen. So I would say, first, have this journey map, identify all your interactions, rate your interactions, have somebody say, okay, and not only understand what is not working, but what is working well, because
yeah.
that is something that we need to keep doing. Otherwise, we are losing our leverage. And one other very important point is, many times we are designing or we are building our own journey map, understanding and asking questions to our clients. Okay, you that already bought from me, how have you gone through this experience? And we leave out of the design a lot of people who didn't buy from us and maybe had a motive. And that is also a driver to understand what made you go to the other company instead of to mine. And at what point did you make that decision? Because then, if we understand what happened at that moment, then we have an opportunity to shift that decision. So for me, the framework or the canvas is this journey map that tangibilizes all your interactions, all your experiences, and from there we can start redesigning them.
Okay, so you help, let's say, brands, but the people inside the brands to design this map.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, and I guess they
yes,
suffer quite a lot.
It's very complex, because it's not, maybe one interaction has many processes behind. For example, getting a claim. You have a team that is processing the claim, but the claim goes through social media. So there has to be one person that goes that gets that claim or that feedback that somebody made in a post in Instagram and then deliver it to the CX department. So there are a lot of processes that maybe they are not fluent and make the experience bad. And it's not because of the interaction itself, but because of all the processes that are behind it. So yes, we have to read the complete system and the blueprint of the company.
And who are your typical clients from the role they have? Would that be the business owner, or would that be someone in marketing who says, oh, something is not working here, we have to do something? Or
look, I have like two big worlds. One is startup companies and small companies. In that example, usually it's the owner himself that has maybe he didn't yet come to the point of delegating responsibilities and is taking control of everything that happens in the business. But when we go up to larger companies, now they're usually it's marketing, but now companies start to have a CX department. But the CX department maybe doesn't want to bring marketing or branding on board, because they say, this is about the experience, it's not about communication.
Okay.
And we have to do a learning experience explaining or showing actually how communication is an intrinsic part of the experience itself. So we have to have everybody that is touching the interactions on board for this to be actually successful. Yeah, it's not only okay, we just redesign and this will be a success. And even further, maybe the main stopper of behavioral change is culture.
Okay.
If you don't have the right culture in the company, for example, I want to be customer-centric company. So my main goal is to have people happy when they come to buy. But if in the culture of your company you are giving benefits to the salesperson that say sells the most, or the I don't know, the one who got the highest ticket, then the culture says, I will reward you for sales. And the CX department says, I want to reward you and I want to train you to make happy customers. And many times those are not living together. You have to make a decision. And when you make a decision, you have to work from, it starts from purpose, then you go to culture. Culture nurtures strategy. The strategy establishes objectives, and the objectives are measured by KPIs. So that would be like the pyramid of how one thing cascades over the other.
Which is very different, even 180 from what people usually do, because they focus
Yes, it's
on the
like
bloody
a,
KPIs. They start with
I
that.
know. People tend to go from the KPI up. Okay, let's change the KPI, or let's change our objectives, or even we work on a strategic level, and culture and purpose are left on a side, and they drive everything else. The higher you go, the larger the effort you have to do, but the easier everything aligns. If you only work on the KPIs and the objectives, maybe it is easy, but you will find friction and confrontation.
Very nice. So what deep thought or takeaway would you like the listeners to get during this talk, this in this interview?
Maybe it is more conceptual, but whenever you want to design your brand experience, whenever you want to show your value to the world, I would say don't leave defining your own purpose to the end. Many times people say, okay, but purpose is like something nice to put in your mission, vision statement on your website. And it's only one tab there. Purpose defines the way you make decisions about your brand, about your business. Once you understand, I will bring the brand Dove, for example. If for some reason chemicals are stop being sold in the world, there are no more chemical or there's no more soap in the world. If your goal is to I don't know, make beauty products, then your business is out. Dove has their purpose that is bringing true beauty of women in the world. You can continue your business indefinitely if that is your purpose. So understanding what is your value beyond your product is critical. And from there, we can start talking about customer experience, designing interactions, nudging behaviors, decision architecture, building habits, and all of the catalog of services we can do. But the first point is understanding what is your purpose. So even though it sounds too conceptual at sometimes or a nice to have, but I don't have time for this, that defines how you will face not only your business and your company right now, but how you will thrive in the future, when the context that nowadays is so changing rolls out in a different way as than what you expect. So yeah, I would say that is critical.
Nice, thanks. Nice. So if people want to talk more with you or learn more about what you are doing or even ask for your services, how can they find you?
My email is info. INFO, info at neurotactics.com.ar. And my website is neurotactics.com.ar.
AR for Argentina.
AR for Argentina, that's right.
Nice. Okay, guys, so you know how to get hold of Janine and to get something working with your brand. You have here an expert. So I want to thank you, Janine. That was amazing. So I hope
Thank you
we
so
get you back
much.
soon on the podcast. It will be a real pleasure.
Okay, it was a great time with you, Thomas. Thank you so much for the invitation.